Welcome to the second part of United Voice of the World Union's Claudia Turbay. This week Claudia talks about racism, what faced her personally and what faces all our migrant workers, certainly in the service industry. As I mentioned last week, UVW, United Voices of the World Union, is a members-led campaign trade union which supports and empowers the most vulnerable groups of precarious, low-paid and predominantly migrant workers in the UK. Do try and catch United Voices of the World Union website, www.uvwunion.org. UVW provides workplace representation, weekly English classes for all levels, employment law workshops and trade union representation courses, amongst many, many else. UVW were founded in 2014, rapidly gaining media attention and popular support with a series of high-profile victories for workers serving Sotheby's, Harrods and the London School of Economics. Take it away, John.
All the Rage with John Bowd. On www.traxfm.org.
Welcome to All the Rage, another interview show this week, which I'm very much looking forward to. We'll be discussing the United Voices of the World Union. And please welcome my guest.
Hello. Thank you, John, for the time, for the opportunity. This is very exciting for us, for the United Voices of the World. In Spanish, it's Voces Unidas del Mundo, which I'm really proud to bring today here. And yeah, just really excited. Thank you.
Introduce yourself.
So my name is Claudia Turbay de Love. I'm Bolivian. I live in London for the past 15 years. I came to London 2 years, I came 15 years ago, but in the first 2 years I worked as a cleaner because as a migrant, we don't have access to the right work visas, which is one of the biggest issues that we have as migrants, you know, the limitations in terms of paperwork. So I didn't have a work permit, but I had to do some cleaning jobs. During my cleaning jobs, there was a lot of exploitation, a lot of abuse, a lot of wage theft, which I don't know if I pronounced that correctly.
Basically, we know what wage theft is.
You know, when translated or not, we know the meaning. I'm one of the, even though I spoke English, and I could defend myself, and I'm quite a spoken person, I still felt the abuse because they still tried it, because they knew that I needed those hours, and then they would, you know. So I started, I started working washing dishes, being paid 2.80 an hour, and I was feeling really grateful because that meant a lot of money compared to what I would earn in Bolivia. So I was happily washing my dishes non-stop for 10 hours without breaks, because I thought that's how it is in Europe. They didn't allow me to wear gloves, and my hands bleeding. And it's that type of abuse that sadly is still happening on 15 years on, and that's why I'm part of the union now, because I feel very passionate about it. Basically what happened is that, I arrived to the UK. The people, nearly 2 million Bolivians, according to statistics, and one thing I'll use probably throughout the interview, I love my statistics.
Please do so.
I absolutely love them. So nearly 2 million Bolivians left Bolivia at the time, and it was a huge wave for South Americans leaving. First, when going to Japan, Switzerland, America, Brazil, Argentina. And according to visas, at the time we didn't need any visas to come to Europe. A lot of Latin Americans didn't. So when I came, I just needed my passport to come here. So it was pretty much almost free entrance. However, we were subject to immigration controls by the Home Office at the airports, and then it would be up to them whether they deport us or not. The story of my entrance to the UK is a whole new show because that is huge. But anyway,
tune in for part two.
Yes, please. Watch this space. And how not to trick the system, but a way of getting into the UK for opportunities. When I started working here, they gave me I didn't have permission to work the hours I had, but I had to do some hours. And that is where the employers take the abuse, because they know all your vulnerability. Mm. At the same time, and this is what happens with our colonized minds, is that we feel that we are less than other nationalities. We feel that we are less than Europe. We have that ingrained within us. And when I came, for example, and I started washing dishes, first of all, I was very grateful. I got a job. Second of all, I thought I cannot ever challenge a European person, a white person, because I am less, and that's my true feelings at the time, even though I feel very confident about my heritage and so on, and how dark I am and hairy or whatever. I still at the time felt quite scared of being deported, so I will do anything without causing any trouble, without raising the alarm anyway. They said don't use gloves because they wanted to save on gloves, I guess, and they didn't allow me to use washing up liquid either. So I had to, and not hot water. So this is beginning of winter, me washing dishes with cold water, and they didn't want me to use the dishwasher either because they wanted to save electricity. So this is me standing, I haven't actually thought about this, that my whole shift, but 10 hours, starting at 7 in the morning, washing dishes non-stop pretty much. I did have a break to eat, but usually we'd be standing again. I wouldn't be seated because we didn't have access to a restaurant. It would be downstairs in the basement, 5 of us. And then my hands are starting to bleed, my fingers, I remember, so I asked my family to send me creams. But we have heard these stories back home already. We have heard you're going to clean so much, your hands are going to bleed. So I knew this before I left Bolivia. Because the 2.80 an hour I would get per day, it would be the day's worth salary would be what I earn in a week in Bolivia. So I was already in the winning. So for me, I didn't care about whatever my health and my safety, it didn't matter, because I had my son back home that I left when he was 4 years old. So I was sending money back home, and that, you know, that dream that, you know, I'm going to do better, I'm going to provide education for my child, etc. So yeah, that's what happened. And then this is what happens still now, is that at the time, I don't know if people, you know, in the audience has experienced this, but they told me the first 2 weeks you work are a deposit. So we're not going to pay you back. We're not going to pay you these 2 weeks, which is enraging. And I honestly just believed it, obviously, and I had to do it. So I worked for 2 weeks for free, and they said to me, when you finish your work, we're going to pay you for these 2 weeks. So first 2 weeks, I didn't get paid. This is my second week in London, but this is my fourth week in London by now. I only had £10 in my pocket when I started working here. I had nothing else. I was very grateful that someone gave me a home, shared accommodation, sleeping in a sofa. So then the fourth week came, which is the next, you know, the fourth week came, I was supposed to get my payment. And then the guy said to me, the business has been quiet, which didn't make sense because I had been cleaning dishes all day and my hands were bleeding out of so many dishes I washed. The sixth week came along, and then he said, and I said, you know, I need my payment. And he said, yeah, sure, we're going to pay you today. He said, me and my brother would like to go in a car with you for a little round and maybe have some fun, some sex fun. And then my colleague, another person that was in the kitchen, he said to me, Claudia, they want to have sex with you. They just had it with another waitress and she got pregnant and she had to have an abortion by them. So then he came, and when I was on my own, I was like washing the dishes, and he came and said, like, I needed to sleep with them to get my check. So what I did, I just escaped from the restaurant. I escaped, but I felt so relieved and happy and free, without my wages, without the deposit, 6 weeks worth of work, crazy hours, without any payment. Now, sadly, at the time, they were lucky because I had nowhere to go. You know, migrant woman, single mom with my child in Bolivia. I needed the money. I needed that was nothing compared to the, you know, what I needed to overcome being separated from my son, and what I came to achieve. So I just put that on the side and continued and went to do other work with all the type of abuses too. You know, cleaning houses, and then having a long list of 10 items to clean in the house for 2 hours, I mean, and they pay and all that. But I think what my point is now is that that type of abuse that happened 15 years ago is still happening now.
Well, that type of, I would inspire listeners to go and read George Orwell's Down and Out in Paris and London, where he also washes dishes. And with aside from the sexual harassment, there isn't a hell of a lot that's even changed. And that was written in the early 20th century.
And this is sad. But you see, this is where I think, for me, I use myself as an example of how this colonizing of the mind and emotionally how we feel so little to challenge abuse. And I use my experience in the sense that I know that I've always been a very confident person to challenge injustice. However, I was in the UK, in a country that I had never been before, with authorities that I had never experienced before, and actually I was pretty scared. So out of fear, I had to accept this, and because I had nowhere to go, is that I felt that I had to put up with it and just pretend it hasn't happened, and actually let them get away with it. Now, what's happening with United Voices of the World is precisely the opposite, is that finally we, the migrants, have found a place where we can, where we are supported. We have a voice. And that's why, you know, the whole name is United Voices of the World, because we are, I think at the moment we are nearly 90 countries or nationalities that form the union. So for me, that's where the passion comes to the union and the power and the movement that we're creating. If I had had United Voices of the World, 15 years ago, if I had had them, I mean, there's no doubt that we, would have been outside the premises and, you know, handling and managing and, you know, making them responsible, accountable for their actions, for the abuse that they had on their workers. But I didn't have that then. And this is what I feel is happening now, 15 years later. This movement is created because unions, independent unions like United Voices of the World exist. And migrants will get in a voice. And we need to get a voice because at the moment, migrants' self-esteem is hugely bruised by everything that's going on around the world.
John Bouts, all the rage, all the on Trax FM.
So United Voices of the World works specifically with migrants to Britain. Are you only London-based at the moment, or further out now?
Right. United Voices of the World, I wasn't there at the founding stage. I've only come to the Union a year and a half ago. Although it's almost like 4 years, I would say it's 4 years old. It's pretty new. 4 to 6, because the founding members started, you know, the work in like little, I think in cafes and, you know, pubs and getting their movement.
Yeah, I remember reading about that. Yeah.
Very, very early stages. I believe most of us are migrants, but there are, of course, some British workers as well, British members. The union is growing by 100 to 150 new members per month, and a lot of them as well are now not necessarily migrants either. So our latest demographics show that actually is covering wider than London too, because it's growing so quickly. We haven't yet had the time to analyze our data again, but that's something that we decided recently we're going to do next, to see where our membership is and what's the trend within our membership as well. But I think it's creating support, it's creating inspiration across sectors, which is fantastic. Like, for example, I work within the education sector, and a lot of people in the education center now or sector know about the union, which also comes from the works that we did, you know, in the London School of Economics. So within the education sector, we have a massive impact of getting outsourced workers to employment, permanent employment.
But these specific people you're recruiting, they tend to be in low-paid sectors, cleaning and catering.
That's right. Yeah. So low-waged.
You don't actually recruit educators per se, do you?
No. No. That's a strong no.
I was about to say, because they have their own unions.
No, they have their own unions, academics, they have their own unions, thank you very much, and you know, all the support to them. I don't see society changing if we don't support the working class, if we don't support the ones that are the most oppressed, right? I don't see a fairer society if we are not given the power. I always say, it is not about telling someone who has more money to say to them, you shouldn't have it, for me. And you know, maybe audience might disagree with me. My view is that we're not saying you shouldn't have it. What I'm saying personally is I should have the same. I should have exactly the same rights to access the same. I'm not telling you not have it. I'm saying I want it to. I deserve it to. So, yeah. Which many people might not agree with that, but that's my view.
No. Well, I mean, if people don't agree in equal access to rights, I'd like to know what they're...
Please say.
Contact Tracks FM is far from.
Absolutely,
tell me,
yeah.
Why you think I'm worthless or Claudia's worthless than you are. The response might be a tad less than polite from me.
That's fine.
One thing I am good at, yes. The two languages I speak, English and profanity.
Love it.
So what are, well, firstly, how do you find recruiting, and further, I mean, do you find it easy or difficult, and then further to that, actual recognition in the sectors you work in from companies of United Voices of the World?
Right, okay, that's an interesting question, because obviously I am biased, you know, because of the union. I have to admit that, and I recognize that. However, I do think that at the moment, the union, we're not doing hard recruiting, because the workers are themselves recognizing the work that we do. And I think what is different about, I haven't been in other unions before, so I couldn't compare to any other union on how we do things now. I was actually very pro, or how do you say it, very against unions in the past. So someone has been trying to recruit me,
yes,
for like other unions, and once the big unions, like, within my workplace. And I always say, no, I don't believe in unions, because I never believed they did the work that they had to do.
Okay.
Until I came across United Voices of the World from my other previous charity work that I've been doing for like years with Latino community. And so I don't think we necessarily do a lot of recruiting ourselves, hard recruiting. People are really coming through the doors. People are really contacting us. Proof of that, as I said earlier, that we have 100 to 150 members that are coming without us doing a lot of recruiting. I think our actions, our direct actions, speak for themselves. And I think that is what's bringing people on board. You have to remember as well that the United Voices of the World offers something quite different to perhaps other unions. We don't have, first of all, our committee member, which I'm part of as well, is non-hierarchical, meaning that we don't have a president, a vice president, we got rid of that. So we don't have that. In our committee member, in our executive committee, sorry, all of us have the power and anyone can join. At the moment we are 17 to 20, if I'm not mistaken, members, and then we meet twice a month and we make decisions, but we don't make decisions for the membership. We start to lead on things that we think we need to lead on, as the usual stuff, you know, that we are legally responsible for. But we lead on things that we believe will be good for membership, and we hear out the membership. We have our general meetings every month. We have a space for the general membership, so when they come to our meetings, they leave learning for them to have a better quality of life and ensure that employment rights are met. So every time they come to the union, we meet this criteria, we ensure that they learn something, but also we engage with them. So everyone, it's not about the committee and the membership. We are all members. We are all one big, loud, noisy bunch of
people. You have some good demonstrations.
We have. You have to remember, we're very passionate people,
yes,
too. You know, Latin Americans, we have a lot of passion. And one thing that one thing that we have that we do pretty well is art in Latin America. Mm. We have big carnival, you know, one of the biggest carnivals in the world, and across South America and Latin America. So we have that passion and we're using it now here because finally we have found our voice. Mm. Finally we can channel it. All our meetings are in Spanish and in English and in French sometimes. They are translated. So there is no loss. There is no loss in translation. As a very good friend of mine taught me this term, she said, Claudia, what you're doing is you're doing justice of the language. Finally, the migrant people or the people that don't speak the language have the voice. In a very competitive country, in a very capitalist country, they have found their voice. And I think that's what makes us different. It gives us the power. We give power and we empower each other. So if someone has an issue, it just doesn't stay there in the inbox of someone's big union. No. It becomes an issue and all of us act on it. So
the old British trade union saying, an injury to one is an injury to all.
Ours, which is really beautiful, ours is the mess with all of us.
Yes.
So similar. So
which in Spanish is.
Oh well, I don't think we could say it in really. I want to keep it professional.
Okay.
No, but basically we are, you know, one here. You know, one for all, and that's the beautiful thing about it. We also, for example, in the day we have workshops, we have food, we laugh, we get upset as well. You know, some cry when upset that has happened, and we share the pain, and we're in it together. And what I love about the union is that it also has. Someone said to me when I was in a protest at the LSC, for example, someone said to me, "You're not a clean anymore. Why are you getting involved? You know, you shouldn't care." And that in itself is the reflection of society today.
Yeah.
Why is it because I'm not clean anymore that I can be part of the union and actually be of support of them, right?
Yeah, I've showed up to trade other unions' picket lines in my CWU clothes, and they're like, "Nice to see you. Why are you here?" I said, "Because you're on strike."
Mm. Exactly.
It's called solidarity, mate. Oh,
absolutely.
Great, come on in. Yeah, it's also they're surprised.
Absolutely.
Even within the union sector.
Understandably,
because people don't do that, right?
I have a little theory on that. I believe that is because we as human beings, we have been conditioned to believe that we always have to go forward, we always have to be better, a better version of ourselves. So, for example, in my case, I don't anymore clean, obviously, because I left and then I went to work doing my thing in an office, and then as a mental health professional, but then socially could be considered I'm better, that I've done better, that I've achieved a better place. Whereas I haven't done it for the money, I've done it because that's my area of call, that's what I want, that's my passion, right? So there is a consideration that because I've moved out of that, then I should only look forward, I should not look back. And I think that's what happens in society. You know, why are you supporting the cleaners? You're not cleaning anymore, that's not your issue anymore.
Yeah, there is that attitude that these things, very much especially a British attitude, that things don't have anything to do with you I find that, well, I won't go on about it too much, but it's something.
No.
It's something listeners of the show will be familiar with, how angry, I've talked about the working class before on the show, and we'll do a lot more in the future. And one of the things I do think is we have to look at ourselves. And,
absolutely.
Because we don't do ourselves any good, you know. Daytime TV does not do us any good. It portrays us
as scum,
and we should just leave it behind.
But then we watch daytime TV for a reason. There is a reason why, and I'm myself as a feminist too, there is a reason why, for example, there are magazines that, you know, portray women, there are magazines why, you know, they are airbrushed and all that. There is a meaning to that for all of us. So I would say that, for me, again, going back to the point of, you know, why we look back and say, okay, working class issues, they're not my issues anymore. For me, is the fear. The fear that if you do go back and you look back, you're going to lose a place in society. And that is a very instilled, silly, unconditioned way. And again, you know, maybe a little bit of innocent ignorance as to, I can only look forward to what's going to be backwards and then I'm going to be in trouble. I think for me, that's...
I agree, although I wouldn't even necessarily say it's about looking backwards. It's just... It's called giving a shit. I mean, it doesn't mean that you have
100%.
To, yeah.
Totally. But I think...
I have done some cleaning, but I've never done it as a professional job. But that doesn't mean I don't care about cleaners. You know?
That's right. But I totally agree. I think my point is that socially, I guess because I always put it back to mental health part and the psyche, that socially we are conditioned, at least in my view, to always do better. Mm. Instead of just accepting that, you know what, it's fine. Yeah. I can actually be middle class, say, and still work for the working class. Or I can, you know, there shouldn't be divisions anywhere in the first place anyway. But yeah.
We'll have a whole show.
We can,
class.
Welcome
to take part in.
I'm 100%. I feel very passionate about it.
Yeah, okay. Well, it certainly comes up. There's lots of intersectionality on the show.
Brilliant.
So much so that intersectionality has become a bonus word on the show.
Brilliant.
If you're a listener and you hear me say it, you get a free Mars bar or something.
Amazing.
Which is difficult if you're listening somewhere in like Peru or France or something and go, can you send it? I think it will melt by the time it gets there.
Yeah, totally.
Just before I go on, I just want to make a quick note to Dave. In our last interview I conducted with somebody, he had to cut out the sound of a siren. If you're wondering what happened about 3 minutes ago, Dave, that was a helicopter going over. I get to these interesting places.
Oh, yeah, of course you are,
yeah.
Hopefully the alarm won't go off, because I'm a fire marshal too, so I'll have to act as a fire marshal.
Yes,
because there is a person here, you, so I had to act.
I've got to say, just before we go on, I want to ask you some more questions about the union, but I'm really intrigued by, you know, you've done cleaning jobs, dishwashing, you are working with this union. We're speaking today in an education institute, in the offices of that. You work with the NHS and mental health. Just to bring in a mainstream British media narrative, why are immigrants so lazy and just come over here and just want to take our benefits?
All right, okay. Why are we so lazy?
Yeah, I can't believe it. You've got, what, 3 jobs on the go? Yeah. Anyway, moving on.
Exactly. Thank you. So we're not taking jobs, you see?
No, it's the fear again.
It's the fear.
Yeah,
you know, I had a client, just to add to that, I had a client in mental health, and I'll bring it to in the part of mental health by it. I had a client that said to me, I hate people that you come into my country. This is a black man telling me this. And he's and you know, at that point, I have the by you know, my ethics, whatever, or my profession, I could say, you know what, I'm not going to accept here racist or, you know, discriminatory comments. But for me, that's an opportunity to get into the mind of the person who's refusing me or rejecting or you know, resisting my presence in the country. So I actually open up a conversation. Okay, what is it that you hate so much about me being in your country? And then it went on to actually be the fact that he said, look at you. You're younger than me, you're doing better than me, you look like a professional working for the NHS, and I'm still a loser. That's what he said. And I haven't managed to get half of what you got. So the fear wasn't the fact wasn't that he hated me for being me, he hated the stuff that he couldn't access because he believed I accessed them on his behalf.
I would argue, and again, this keys into a major factor, I think, of working class people's lives.
Mm.
That's an example of someone who is angry and hateful because they don't have control over their own life.
That's right.
It's a lack of control.
Absolutely.
I have it in my own life. I openly admit, I say this on the show. There is, even with me, there are things I can't control about my own life. And yet, it makes me angry. It makes
John Bouts, all the rage, all the on Tracks FM. Tracks FM.
Absolutely, and he
that's
has. But that's because you have, in you know, we say in psychology, you processed yourself. Mm. You are processing all the time.
Yeah.
But this person wasn't. The point was, I hate Claudia because she's a migrant Bolivian woman that she deserves less than me, but yet she's doing better than me in less the time. You know, he was nearly 50 years old, at the time I was 35, and I had only been in the country 13 years at the time, and he felt in 13 years you achieved what I haven't done in 50. So there is the anger coming. I don't want you here. I want you to go.
There's things you've achieved that I haven't managed in 40, so.
Thank you. Thank you. We have to work hard.
A point of congratulation, not a point of resentment.
Thank you for sharing and embracing my success.
Welcome. So I just want to come back to something you said about the union, about being very popular and people coming
right.
to you. Do you? I mean, I don't know if you have figures on this,
mm-hmm.
or maybe you just talk to some people, but what is it that's promoting United Voice of the World? Is it a social media presence? Is it word of mouth? Where are people hearing about you?
Right, this is interesting. We have had, obviously, you know, we don't have a lot of, I mean, we don't have a, we have a communication strategy that is loosely being managed by us, and I think we've been very good at that. But we don't have, you know, like a marketing strategy where we have thousands of pounds invested in. We don't, because we don't have the, you know, we work with precarious, you know, workers, and you know, we don't have those big incomes. However, Facebook, social media has been, Twitter has been a great tool for us. But I think the union, and I haven't taken any part of that, full credit to people in the office that have been doing this. They've been very clever at being on top of things, and to being, I think, speaking the language that people want to hear, which is direct action. We have been very, very, very good, or they have been very good in the office, at really putting the message out there. Whenever we have a campaign, whenever we have a strike, whenever we have a case, of spreading the word and making people feel that they're part, because it's true, you know, our success is based on relationships, and this is something that was recently said in the committee, a committee meeting we were having, a discussion on what do we do, because after coming back from Italy, we came back with inspiration, you know, what do? Let's think about this, we think about that, we heard all the 13 countries are doing this. They felt hugely inspired by us as well. And that was precisely, actually, yeah, that's actually a good point. They said, you know, you have direct action, it's visible. And because it's visible, it's creating that attention and that interest in people. So I think it has worked and is working because we offer a very direct message. I don't think we're apologetic about anything. We really are fearless. Fearless.
Fierce is good too, but fearless.
Yes. Yeah. So I mean, yeah. Bottom line, we're not fearful of anyone really, and I think we have a good mix of political views as well in the group, and I think that's what enriched really our practice, our, you know, way we action, because we don't follow one political view. We don't have a political stance either. But we do have very strong feelings about what should change, what social impact we want to have in the country. Not just for us, not just for our membership, for everyone. And I think that has... I think something actually, now I'm thinking about it, another thing that I think is very useful, and we hadn't, I don't think people have paid too much attention to it, is that whenever we go for campaigns, if we only need one member to go for it, to go and, you know, challenge an employer, and if there are 100 people employing that, you know, facility, everyone will get the benefit. So we actually, when we go for one, we only need one person to challenge an employer, and then the benefit will be across. So I think that's also something that has been very welcomed by people. And in our meetings as well, people can come. They don't need to be members to attend our meetings. Anyone is welcome to our meetings. And I think that makes us well quite special. Because sometimes there isn't the money for membership.
No.
Even though our membership actually is one of the lowest, if not the lowest.
Yes. Well, I don't even know that actually.
Thank you. You have noticed that. You've done your homework, John.
Good.
It
corresponds to your monthly gross income. So if you're on £700 or less, it's £6 a month.
That's right.
£701 to £1,000, it's £8 a month, and so on, which is very,
and if
very,
you're,
very
if
great.
If you're in a, and if you earn more than 1,000, and it doesn't have a limit, obviously, you know, there are, that our membership doesn't have, you know, huge income as such. But yes, it's £10 is the maximum, and that's what makes it possible. And there has been some discussion about, you know, whether it's too expensive, or whether actually there is a sense of actually that's charging for help. We really had this discussion, we really think it's not, because actually it's such a good price for the security that you get. At work, we have situations where people, employers know that the, you know, workers are unionizing and becoming our members, and all of a sudden the treatment changes. We don't even need to go and challenge employers. Our our campaigns, I mean, the latest with the Bank of New York last, I think it was 36 hours lasted, which is a phone call, starting the negotiation, 36 hours, changes happened, and, you know, I don't remember how many employees, but there were, I think, just about 100 employees, and now they're going to have that, you know, the London Living Wage and better employment rights. So I think we are in our... on our moment, and national media covering us, you know, covering press releases, covering our work.
Yeah.
Is that how you say?
Yeah. Be a little wary of the mainstream media in Britain. They're not trade union friendly very often.
Very often, that's right. That's right. And this is something, that's something that we, I think, I mean, obviously we're not perfect, but I think we do have a good sense and sound understanding of where we stand and what our work represents to many. There will be people that will be rejecting us 100%. People will be rolling their eyes and thinking, oh, these noisy people. I've been pushed once when I was outside the Ministry of Justice. We were, you know, screaming and shouting because they refused to give the London Living Wage to the employees. And someone pushed me. A guy, as I was with a microphone, someone pushed me and said, get out of the way. And it was a white, obviously middle class or upper class dude. In a suit. And because I'm quite quick with words, I said, yeah, sure, you're rushing to go and buy your present, because it was near Christmas, buying your Christmas presents. We're here, you know, trying to get the absolute minimum London Living Wage, and probably people don't even have the opportunity to go and shop for presents. So, yeah, sure, you know, that's...
Nice one.
These things angers me, but anyway. Yeah.
Did you? I don't know if you had any connection to this, but I think it must have been about 2 years ago. It was January. Mm-hmm. I think it was. It's my first protest of the year, and it was the cleaners in John Lewis in Oxford Street.
That's right. We were in it.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I actually didn't go, and I joined the union just after that.
Oh okay.
Because I just felt fascinated, and then Topshop was and John Lewis were pretty much, I think, kind of like.
There was some young boy, a couple of teenage boys who sort of, you know, one of them said, "Why can't you just go somewhere else and get another job with better pay?"
That's right.
And
yes.
I must say, the trade union leader was very, very professional in talking to them. Because I just turned and went, fuck off.
Absolutely.
Which wasn't very professional.
But you see,
I can't stand that.
But people, but this goes again to, this is why I think United Voices of the World is doing two things simultaneously. A, is allowing people to feel empowered and say, enough. You're not going to treat me like this. You're not going to promise me a pay rise and then give me 30p pay rise after 5 years of work. Enough. I also deserve to have sick pay, I also deserve maternity pay, I also deserve to have a contract, I deserve to have the income to plan, I also deserve a better quality of life. We have dreams too, we have children too, we want to send our children to good places so they can educate themselves. So why is it that the cleaners or the low wage or the working class cannot afford to dream this? Why? So I think United Voices of the World and other independent unions are giving this empowerment to people. They're giving this hope to say, you know what? We are going to challenge anyone that wants to abuse you, and we're going to bring a better quality of life for you because you deserve it. Not because we're heroes. It's because we believe we deserve it. We believe that the power has to come to the people. At the same time, I think what the union is doing is that it is highlighting things that people didn't know. People, for example, I almost fell off my chair when someone in the education sector, a very high, of course I will never say a name, but someone very high in the education sector, educational leader across the country, that tells me, oh, Claudia, it will be, we were talking about, because whenever I can, especially in those circles, I always bring up issues about migrants and the oppression, which I feel really, really passionate about. And because I know that I'm one of the darkest person wherever I go now in my circles, because I got to a place, you know, my employment, whatever, that that's, you know, I'm in boards where I'm the only dark one, the only one that is a foreigner. I know. But I like to use those spaces to bring up issues with oppression. Mm. I like to use those privileges, as they say, to use them, you know. Anyway.
John Bouts, all the rage, all the on Tracks FM. Tracks FM.
power in the hand of the worker. But it all amounts to nothing if together we don't stand. There is power in a union. Now the lessons of the past were all learned with workers' blood. The mistakes of the bosses we must pay for. From the cities and the farmlands to trenches full of mud. War's always been the bosses' way, sir. The union forever defending our rights. Down with the blackleg, the workers unite. With our brothers and our sisters in many far-off lands. There is power in a union. Now I long for the morning that they realise brutality and unjust laws cannot defeat us. But who'll defend the workers who cannot organise when the bosses send their lackeys out to cheat us? Money speaks for money, the devil for his own. Who comes to speak for the skin and the bone? What a comfort to the widow, a light to the child. There is power in a union.
This person tells me, Claudia, it would be great if... I think everyone who comes to UK should really need a visa. I think it's too easy. No one needs visa to come to UK. This is someone who is hugely, hugely important in education sector. And he believes this, or he lives under this bubble that people don't need visas to come to UK. And that is the sign that actually many or refuse to know, or they don't know. They don't know the story of the country. They don't know how much, you know, they oppress the world. They don't know that many people are coming on boats because, you know, extreme poverty. But actually, also, they don't know that these people coming on boats is because they're coming from a country that most certainly enhanced the financial stability of the UK in the first place. And they deserve to be here. So these are the things that I think people like, unions like ours, are raising the issues of things that have been undercover. And people have pretended they don't exist or don't want to know about it. They live very comfy in their bubbles. I have my job, etc. My capitalist style. Go to work many hours of the day, make the money, come back, and whatever. So I think it's doing those two things. People are becoming aware of our issues.
Yes. So I think I agree with everything you just said. I think you should do my show.
Okay, good, let's do it. I can talk forever, John.
You do it better than I do. I have all these things, I have great conversations when people, I know that the term triggered has become a bit of an insult term, but actually I'm really quite good when someone triggers me.
Good, love it.
Yeah, I'm better than when I actually have to sit down and write it down in a sensible way.
But John, the thing is that people don't know many things, but I also strongly believe that I guess as a mental health professional, or I don't even like to use it as professional, as a mental health person, I think a lot of in our psyche is about always this competition, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes because we don't want to know of our past, because we don't want to acknowledge where we come from, because we believe that better is always the option, is that we separate ourselves so much and we detach ourselves so much from the reality. I had a colleague once that said to me, we were talking about, you know, people being underpaid in China and doing these crazy jobs, and for us to have our mobile phones, for us to have, you know, all these gadgets. And I remember clearly, and actually I left my job because of that, because she became my colleague and I could not work with someone so closely that believed these things. And she said, I don't care how many hours a Chinese man has to work, so long as my beans that sweet that is eaten in Britain?
Oh, baked beans.
Baked beans.
Yeah.
As long as my baked beans don't go up by 5p.
I think that's probably what a lot of people think, at least.
No, I appreciate it.
I can understand that you don't want to work with someone like that.
Yes. I left my job.
Again, this show is not about my life, but I have known there are people, a person with which I have worked with, whose level of selfishness makes me feel physically sick.
Mm.
And you might say that's your problem. Fine, it's my problem. But
no.
It's,
but actually, John, I would like to challenge you in that. I don't think it's to say I don't think it would be a case. It's your problem. I think it's society's problem. We all create that.
Yeah, absolutely.
We all create that because we absorb what we believe that should be done, what we should be living like. Like for example, again, I always go back to things that people say. You know, why are and I have no respect for any person in this world, most of the time, like the Kardashians, for example. I hear a lot about, you know, why do people follow her? Why are they so rich doing nothing? My answer is because you watch them. Because you follow them, because you like the picture. So we create that. So let's go back again and take ownership. We create that.
Yeah.
Why do we have these magazines that portray women in a fake, and you know they're all airbrush.
Airbrush.
This is the third word John is correcting me on this show. Thank you. So airbrushed. I love it. I'm always learning.
In a non-oppressive way.
Absolutely, in a very open way. Very socialist, you know, we're here, power to the people. Thank you, John. So now, airbrushed. Why do we have these magazines where women are airbrushed? Because we buy them.
Mm.
It's simple. Because we buy them. Stop buying them and you will see what happens. Why do we have these programs that portray all this? Because we buy them.
Completely agree.
It is your fault, my fault. We are part of it. So we take responsibility and things hopefully, and it will change. There will be a dynamic change.
All the rage is a Kardashian free zone. I will say nothing more.
Well, they're tapping into something that we are giving them.
Well, but it's, yes, but they're also, they present you with a fake reality of something. I mean, okay, what's interesting to me about that is like so many things.
I love how we jump into, I love it. Let's continue.
Okay. the awful TV talent shows, which are bad enough anyway, but just to give you a bit of an example of British culture, this is the kind of thing used to happen on the end of piers in seaside towns. You know, someone would come
on piers,
stage,
okay, yeah.
And juggle and
that's
and
right, yeah.
No one needs to see that. But, you know, often people get involved because it's a collective action. And so much working class culture and history in Britain has been actively suppressed, especially in the last 30 years or so.
That's right, yeah.
That we used to be more involved in things that's actually made a difference to our lives. Now we don't. Now you don't have a lot of control over your life. But
no.
You can watch this.
Yes.
Now, on one side, there is a benefit. I remember talking to someone I know who said, you know, we're talking about being poor and having access to the internet via a phone or a laptop or whatever, saying I don't understand this. And I said to him, no, do you know what, I go further. I think it's a right for people to have access to the internet because it's the only place you'll ever really have the possibility of equality.
Interesting.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying we all do have equality on the internet. And
yeah.
I'm someone who has nothing to do with social media. But it's the chance where if you happen to be a smart person on a particular subject, it doesn't matter how much money you make.
Oh, 100%.
You have equal access to talk about that.
100%. 100%. Part of the listing of extra support that hopefully we'll get to talk about more mental health in the next show.
We will.
Thank you.
That will be in part two.
Great. Part of it, I added in the list, which I'm very lucky, I'm director of this project that gives free health for the community. Part of it is actually free courses on Open University, which I only found out myself. I love it. I'm totally, I'm going on my third course now in 2 months because I just can't get enough of it because I think I really detest and dislike with passion. Why do we have to pay for everything we need to access so we actually enrich our lives? Why is it? I mean, even water, is has a price, you know, it's not free. So when I saw these courses, and actually they are, and I hope the audience is taking note of this, Open Universities has hundreds if not thousands of free courses that give you now the qualification. You can actually print it out if you go to an interview, whatever, you can, because not all of us are academic, not all of us have the money to go. I mean, I'm hoping to do my third year of uni and I still haven't finished to do my master's. I don't have the money for that. I can't afford it as a single mom. I just simply can't. And you know, these are the issues that yes, you know, why cannot we access things that are more for free? And yet, no, I get too excited with the subject. But yeah.
No, I'm an OU boy myself. So
okay.
It changed my life. I think if your listeners are interested, I think we should do a fundraiser to raise the money for you to do your master's.
Oh, amazing!
I'll do a half marathon, and they can pay me. To do that, because you are clearly an example of how so many working people in this country will all benefit.
100%.
Because you're doing your education and putting it straight back into the community.
Well, listen. You see, this is one thing that I want to look. Obviously, really, you cannot see me, but you know, like you can see me here. I got so much hair. Like I went to Vienna recently. My boyfriend is from Austria, and we were in there. And I clearly, I mean, he's white, very white. He'll probably listen to this and be laughing because I'll say him the link. but he's so very cute and lovely. And so when we are in town, I notice how I'm the darkest spot in town, clearly. And I can see the stairs. I could feel it. This is 2018. I mean, you know, hand in hand with my boyfriend, and people are looking at us because he's, whoa, you know, this is too much. It's sometimes too much. I was in Cornwall a year and a half ago, and there was these people just turning their heads looking at me because that was the darkest thing they've ever seen. Now, what I think, for me, what has bothered me the most, I've been searched in each country I've gone. I won't say which country now. Oh, no, actually, I will say openly. In Spain, I was told I wasn't welcome in Spain because they say we don't want any more Bolivians in here. Do you know that? When I was married before, I was married to a European man, and then they said, you should be grateful because it's thanks to him that you're allowed in our country. It's because of him that you're be given permission to come in and visit Spain. They don't want Bolivians, and there is a lot of struggles there too. But my view is, I'm a threat. Similarly, I'm a threat. My nationality is a threat to the system, the home office system here. Don't get me started in the home office.
Actually, I will, because I want to talk about that in the next section, but carry on.
I was almost deported three times. So they're not, I mean, I have huge passion against, not against, but really against the practices, which are horrendous and inhumane. My uncle was deported to not long ago. It's horrendous. So why am I a threat to the country? Why is it that after I obtained, for example, now I have a French passport, I'm a EU member. Why is it now that my French nationality makes me a normal person, but my Bolivian one made me go through a lot of searches? Why is it that my Bolivian nationality is a threat to wherever I go? Why is it that as a Bolivian national, I had to apply for so many papers and prove so many things to get in to visit a country for a day? I am not, as a Bolivian, I'm not allowed to go into to the world for at least half the world, or more than three quarters of the world I need a visa for. As a French one, I probably go through the whole world without a visa. Why? Well, I'm the same person. I am exactly the same person.
All the Rage with John Bowd. On www.tracksfm.org.